As part of Montana Public Media's Climate Week, climate change is the focus of our nightly features this week during Montana Evening Edition. Tonight, News Director Sally Mock sits down with three University of Montana climate experts to get an overview of the current status of climate change and the public response to it. Dr. Steve Running is Regents Professor of Ecology and a member of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that won the Nobel Peace Prize. Dr. Stephen Schwartz is Associate Professor and Chairman of Communication Studies. Dr. Lori Young is Associate Professor of Natural Resource Social Science. Here's Sally.
Dr. Running, I want to start with you. The warnings about climate change have been around for a long time, and so have some of the impacts. But where are we now in terms of the evidence of climate change? And I'm speaking worldwide at this point.
Well, the latest IPCC report just came out a couple of weeks ago, and it went through all the metrics that we've developed over the last decades. The global air temperature of the last decade is the highest on record. Arctic sea ice is one measure that's very well done by the satellites, and 2012 was the all-time record low. And so we're seeing, of course, atmospheric CO2 going up at actually a bit of an accelerating rate, and carbon emissions still accelerating. And so all the regular measures are continuing on the trajectory we've seen for the last decade. There was a funny little blip of sea level that went down for a year. And, of course, the scientists found this quite curious. And it turns out it's because there was so much rain in a couple of continents that enough rain was evaporated out of the ocean and then fell on land that they could measure the difference. And, of course, then the sea level rise trajectory started back up. But all these measures are continuing the way they have been for 10 to 20 years.
You've been in Montana a long time. What are we seeing here as evidence of climate change?
The clearest measures we have are our winters getting milder and shorter. And now it's getting rare for Missoula to have a winter night temperature below zero. In the last two winters, we haven't had one night below zero, for example. Our snowpack's melting about 2 weeks earlier than 50 years ago, and that then stretches out the summer season, stretches out the wildfire season, and, of course, has also triggered the big mountain pine beetle epidemics. And the final impact that's quite clear here is that our August stream flows are getting measurably lower, 20 to 30% lower than they were 50 years ago. And so that really says something for our aquatic ecosystems in the small streams.
Dr. Young, these changes have tremendous importance for land managers. How are they responding, and how can they respond to all this?
Well, that's a great question. And one of the key challenges that our public land managers face, Forest Service, National Park Service, is that a lot of our environmental policy is based on the assumption that our ecosystems are fairly stable and predictable. And that if, you know, a land manager goes out and does something, say a silvicultural treatment or, habitat improvement, that there will be certain kinds of outcomes. But with climate change, we know that our ecosystems are changing and that we may need to change our management style in order to meet our goals, whatever those goals are: biodiversity conservation, providing recreation opportunities, providing for livelihoods, for timber and other resources. And so that means our public land management agencies have to become more adaptable and flexible. They have to be nimble in ways that are challenging for big bureaucracies. And I think that's what public land managers are really trying to get their heads around. How do you retain the flexibility to respond to change on the landscape and to meet public needs and concerns? I mean, the public obviously really cares about these lands. And in many cases, especially with sort of iconic landscapes like Glacier, members of the public are watching to see how they're changing. And so how land managers respond is really important to the public. So they need that flexibility, but also to figure out how to be accountable to the public in that context.
And Dr. Schwartz, how are we having a public conversation about climate change in Montana? Where are we there? I'm guessing we're not in a place that's particularly realistic about it.
I would say it's a mixed bag. There are pockets of discussion here and there. You're starting to see it get explained and connected to the coal export issue, which is emerging in Montana. Some cities are starting to take a more active role in developing climate action plans. But more broadly, I think that this discussion has stalled a bit, and I think that's true nationally as well. I think that reflects partly some of the difficulties of addressing an issue that can be hard for people to grasp. It's hard to point to direct impacts. It also reflects the difficulties of addressing an issue that's become very polarized. I think that makes it difficult for ordinary citizens to feel comfortable talking about it in everyday conversations. It's also difficult to address an issue, I think, that's global in scope, and especially when a lot of the national and global level institutions aren't really demonstrating political leadership about it. If you have a political system that is not engaging these issues, I think most citizens will say, why should I?
Dr. Renning, scientists are frustrated by the public discussion of this because they feel like the science is, and you included, feel like the science is so clear.
Yeah.
And I know you've talked among yourselves about how you can better communicate with the public about this. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, yes, as the fifth IPCC assessment just illustrates again.
Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Right, that all the measures that we've had in place for years, they just keep marching in the same direction. And so to us, this is really a case closed piece of science from multiple measures from the bottom of the ocean to the top of the mountains and up in the atmosphere and just everywhere we look. And so we find it that we don't know what else to do other than show all this information, and yet that scientific information on its own does not seem adequate to get the politicians particularly to have meaningful discussions on the topic.
Of course, politicians follow. They don't lead. So this public discussion, Dr. Young, is crucial, isn't it? And you were saying public land managers, because they see it. They are discussing it among themselves.
Certainly. Land managers are wondering what the public thinks about the changes that are happening around us in Montana and other places around the country, and what kinds of actions the public might support. And I think the key really is that we have to figure out how to engage in some kind of deliberative dialogue about the key issues around climate change in order to get past the sort of political morass and polarization that we see.
And Dr. Schwartz, when we do discuss it, should we be discussing it from the standpoint of how do we prevent this catastrophe or how do we adapt to it?
I think that both of those angles on the climate change challenge need to be engaged. The questions of adaptation are certainly ones where I think a lot of ordinary citizens have something to say about that. I mean, moving the discussion sort of beyond the science to get to how do we engage this and how do we address it on an everyday basis. You know, those are questions that all citizens can and should participate in, because any kind of climate policies that we come up with are going to have real impacts on people's everyday lives. The mitigation question is definitely a tougher nut to crack, and I'm hopeful that we can have a more forthright discussion about those, because again, I think there are very potent arguments on all sides of that issue that really need to be thought through. And the fact that we've dwelled on disputes about the science for so long, I think, has been to our detriment. It's really held back that discussion, so it needs to take a turn in a new direction.
If the world doesn't take climate change seriously, what do each of you envision life in Montana will be like for the next generation?
Well, what we can project actually fairly accurately is by the end of the century, If we continue on the emissions path that the world is on right now, we will have only a month or two of winter snowpack.
This is by the end of the century.
Yeah, by the end of the century. Of mountain snowpack. Probably almost no snowpack in the valleys. We will have, of course, very much milder winter temperatures and simply a lot longer summers. And since we're not seeing any increase in precipitation, those facts then also result in a more arid landscape, in kind of a Utah sort of landscape instead of Montana.
Dr. Young?
I think just building on what Dr. Renning just was talking about, that we'll have less water for irrigators. You know, farmers and ranchers will struggle to have enough water to irrigate hay crops and other crops. There's some evidence that we'll have climate refugees that come to Montana from other places that have even, you know, are even worse off. That will obviously strain infrastructure and provide its own set of challenges and perhaps opportunities. I think, you know, socially we'll be challenged by the strains on our communities that are put on us by changing environmental conditions that really affect all sectors of society.
Dr. Schwartz.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there is definitely a possibility for increased kinds of conflict over resources. But even more broadly than that, I think it really poses potential challenges to what we might call a Montana identity or Montana culture. These kind of natural threats to also pose threats to some of our cherished traditions, habits, ways of life, whether that's with work or recreation. And so I think it could potentially sort of upend or force us to really rethink what does it mean to be a Montanan and to live a Montanan life. And so I think that's perhaps could be one of the bigger and broader kinds of impacts that climate change could have, is that it could fundamentally influence the shape of Montana culture.
I think if we do respond to climate change, that in Montana we end up with a landscape that is producing renewable energy, and we have a tremendous wind resource. We end up with a place where you can hop on a train in Bozeman or Helena and Missoula and head down to Denver or Seattle, you know, as quick as can be. We have healthy agriculture, farmers and ranchers that have efficient water systems and enough water to irrigate, enough water in our streams for trout and outfitters and anglers and tourists, energy-efficient homes and lower energy bills. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to effectively mitigating and adapting.
Well, I have been speaking with Dr. Steve Renning, who's Regents Professor of Ecology at the University of Montana, Dr. Stephen Schwartz, who's Associate Professor and Chair of the Communications Studies Department, and Dr. Lori Young, who's Associate Professor of Natural Resource Social Science. I want to thank you all for giving us this kind of overview about climate change and where we are in Montana with it so far. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, our climate change feature takes us to Glacier National Park, where reporter Allison Mills goes out with climate researcher Dan Fagry and his crew to examine one of the most visible barometers of climate change, the park's disappearing glaciers.